Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. As I pull out of the driveway, I've noticed I've painted half the bus in Loyola red colors, Loyola Rambler colors. I hope you don't mind, DT, about the change in the color of the bus for this episode.
Who could complain about that? I think everyone who's a Bulls fan, at least in the Chicagoland area, is pretty excited about Loyola as well.
Oh, it's just a fantastic story. A bunch of local kids doing it the right way, being compensated in $200,000 of tuition and room and board, as opposed to what Arizona does. I couldn't be more excited, and they've captured my heart. But Doug, I don't even know if you knew this. There's a big Bulls tie-in from today's Sunday Tribune. Casey Johnson. Did you know that Cam Payne and Denzel Valentine worked out with the Ramblers last summer? And as Denzel said, and I quote, "I worked out there over the summer, built some relationships with some players and coaches, so I feel we're a part of it a little bit." End of quote. I think there's a story here about the impetus and the inspiration of Cam Payne and Denzel Valentine. What say you?
I say I'm going to try and hold off on the 45-minute rant I'd like to give you about how college players get ripped off by NCAA schools getting paid in tuition. Because that could probably go on for the entire podcast if I let it. So I'm just going to let that one slide while just suddenly noting that I think you're an imbecile for even stating that.
Well, it's a good thing you're letting it slide. I don't want to embarrass you on this one. But
yeah. Letting it slide was maybe a stretch there. Maybe not letting it slide anywhere whatsoever, but trying to end the topic was what happened. But no, seriously, I don't know that we want to go down that rabbit hole. But I think it's great. I think it's cool that they did form some relationships there. I'm not waiting for the NBA to come out with some kind of tampering thing, or the NCAA for coming out with some kind of tampering thing somehow for players, you know, talking about other players, which they now have seemed even to crack down a teeny bit on that, where they don't even want that happening so much. Or maybe I'm confusing that with the NFL. I remember reading something about ESPN where they're really discussing how even players tampering is maybe becoming something they don't want to do.
Yeah, it's such a great story, though, for Loyola, the Ramblers, and this whole situation with, like, a mid-major in the Final Four, especially being in Chicago. It shows how basketball crazy this town is, you know, starving for a winner. And it's a really exciting time. And anybody who isn't aware, Denzel Valentine's brother is a coach on that team. So that's why I got a lot of tweets. Is Denzel on the bench? I mean, he looks exactly like him. I don't know if you noticed that, Doug, but it's pretty hilarious how much they look alike. But it's so great to see, and we wish them the best. I can't wait to see if they can win it all. Do you think they got a shot?
No. I mean, come on. They've done great. I've been excited for every game, but they've not exactly gone through a murderer's row of opponents so far. And, you know, maybe they have some shot to get past Michigan, but it seems like whoever they play in the finals is going to be a team that, you know, classically would be viewed as much better than them. Now, that said, you still only have to get lucky in two games. You know, their odds before the tournament started were probably listed at like 1%. And, you know, now they're probably like, you know, 15-16%. So it's still a pretty huge shot relative to what you would expect, but... Yeah, I certainly wouldn't be betting on him.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you there. Especially, I think Michigan is playing the best basketball right now, so I think they're going to be a heavy favorite to win it all. If you know, we'll see. Duke's playing well too. Let's start out though with the beloved Bowl. Let's get to the purpose of this podcast and talk a little Bulls. So they've really embraced in this tank with several losses in a
yes,
row.
They have,
and they're fulfilling their destiny. It's kind of quasi-exciting because I see an opportunity for them to potentially get as low as 5. They're at 7 right now. I think it's very important that they remain at 7. You know, I went back and looked at history of the 8th pick. And the 8th pick for the past 8 years, I think the best player picked at 8 has been Stanley Johnson. I mean, it's unbelievable how bad the players have been there. At 9, actually... you've had better results. You had, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. You had actually 2 All-Stars on the team, the East this year, Kemba Walker and Andre Drummond, who had an historic night last night, were actually picked at 9. But for some reason, 8 has been terrible. 7, obviously there's been a lot of good players, Markkanen and who could forget Steph Curry. So there's been, it just seems like 7 and below is where you want to be.
Are you even talking about this? Like 8 is terrible, but good players at 9?
I mean,
if you were smart, then you would take the guy at 9 at 8. So, I mean, like, if there's good people on the board after 8, there's good people on the board, and you could draft them. I mean, you can't take the stupidity of other franchises and then say, well, no one was available. The guy at 9 was available, and if the Bulls were a good drafting team, which they are, they would probably take that guy at 8 instead.
I always
reject it when people look at, like, a pick. I mean, it's clearly a range. It's the farther you get from one, it's a curve. Like, it goes way down. And if you actually look at the curve, the options at 1 are, like, massively better than everything else. And the decline from, like, 2 to 10 is actually fairly subtle, because usually there's, like, one guy who's, like, a superstar, and you know it ahead of time. Or there's no one. And if there's no one, then it's kind of like really all over the board. You know, like guys come up from anywhere, like the Steph Curry draft. So, you know, I don't think that the 8 pick is cursed or anything like that. If the Bulls land 8, they could get someone good at 8, especially in this draft where you know there's a lot of guys with question marks but who have a lot of potential. This draft, almost for sure, there's going to be someone who becomes a really, really good player, you know, past pick number 7. Now, yes. Will we take that guy? Maybe, maybe not if we were at 8. But there would be at least one guy, I think, in this draft who becomes an all-star caliber player who's taken after the 7th pick.
No, I agree 100%. And you know, shame on you for poo-pooing my 8 is potentially cursed theory. How dare you bring logic to this bus? But I do agree with you. Like, I feel like the more and more I study these players, I kind of feel like 8 to me is like the clear number 1. But after that, I think it's possible. I could argue from about 2 to 10. I'd even go that far. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if someone at 10 ends up being the second best player. I said I love the Bridges. I mean, Mikal Bridges in the NCAA tournament, you saw what he did hitting that 3 in the second half. And Villanova's a very strong team. It's just so impressive some of these guys have been. I know some people will jump over Miles for a poor final game, but Miles Bridges was incredible in the first game of the tournament. So you can't judge a player on one game. That's obviously foolhardy. But the more I watch this, I do agree with you. I do feel like there's going to be a potentially great player picked at 7, 8, 9, 10. The Bulls are going to have an opportunity to get someone good. And that's the most important thing. So we should try to remain positive. But let's talk about the team at hand. A lot going on. And I had a poll about I'd like to throw out to you, which I was shocked at the results, but I happen to agree with it. Assuming there's no one else available, would you prefer Cameron Payne or Jerian Grant as your backup point guard next year? And the results of the poll, let's see, get the latest results. 79% out of 264 votes, Cam Payne 79%, Jerian Grant 21%. This is a guy, Cam Payne, who was, I mean, I think you'd agree, I don't think there's ever been a worse review of a player, and he's really kind of, I think, done a 180 on his reputation, and I've been really impressed with him lately. What say you?
Yeah, I'm hesitating because it's like I've thought about that very question, and I don't know that I have an answer, and you could maybe ask me at different points and get a different one, but I think I'm also going to nod in Cam Payne's direction ever so slightly, just because he shows a little potential to do more. Like, Jerian Grant is like one of the most conservative players you will ever watch play the game of basketball at the point guard position. And Cam Payne is actually, he's a little reckless, he's a little Chris Dunnish, a little over the board, but he does seem to have pretty good vision. He does break his guy down off the dribble, and I think in that sense, he has some upside to improve. And if the guys are playing pretty similar basketball, you would take the guy who you view has, you know, more upside if he fixes some of his flaws. And Cam Payne really hasn't played a whole lot of minutes. So, you know, I think some of those flaws will naturally kind of get better. I mean, I think Cam Payne may have proved that he is an NBA quality backup point guard at this point. I will say I no longer feel like an idiot for having his option picked up for next year, which is a good sign.
Yes, exactly. You know what I've been most excited with him is I think he's kind of developed a little bit of a rapport with Felicio that's made Felicio actually look, you know, somewhat reminiscent of an NBA player. Like, I felt like Wade kind of had that last year with Felicio. you know, with just the drive and throw up for a dunk. And I've seen that with Payne. He had no rapport at all with Grant. You know, Grant is just not. He's not a good playmaker. He's not a good point guard. And I always hear people make the argument, yeah, he's better suited as a two. And I'm like, if he's a two, he doesn't belong in the NBA. He's not nearly big enough to guard twos in the league. He's very weak. I mean, come on, give me a break. As a two, he sucks. He shouldn't be in the league. So his only position he could play is point guard. That's where his frame is geared towards. And if he can't do that, then he doesn't belong in the league. Payne has really impressed me in a few games with, you know, actually hitting jumpers. But more importantly, I think he's really shown an ability to facilitate a passing and improve the players around him. So I'm bored now. And, you know, re-exploring that trade last year, I heard you talk about on your last show. To me, what happened last year was in the beginning of the season, I think Foreman and Reinsdorf felt like they wanted to give it one more chance with this roster, where Paxson was separate and said, I wanted a full rebuild. And by the time that trade was made, Paxson won. The team said, all right, let's rebuild. And I thought that trade was the first step in trying to tank and actually get a lottery pick that year. Now, it backfired in that Portis and actually Nico played well enough to get us into the playoffs. But I thought that was an attempt to tank to try to salvage, you know, in halfway decent potential asset from, you know, expiring contract in Taj Gibson and a player that they had decided to move on from. But does this make you reevaluate that trade at all? That if he can become a backup point guard for the Bulls, wasn't so bad.
It still was pretty terrible. I mean, you still think so. If you just swapped McDermott and Payne, I think then the trade, you'd say, yeah, well, that wasn't so bad right now.
Yeah.
But to throw in Taj Gibson, whom you would have thought would have had some value around the league to at least get you a second rounder back, a high second rounder, you know, from someone or something like that. To throw him in as well, I thought that made the trade kind of poor. And then also to give up a second rounder. Now,
yeah.
I know
yeah.
The Bulls do not care about second rounders. I have to get that through my head. Like, they just view them as pennies that they found in the ground. Like, they just don't care at all. And I always think that's crazy because they do so well in the draft that they should care about second rounders, but they don't. So, you know, if you ever want to make a trade with the Bulls and you're thinking, like, you're ready to do the deal, you should just demand two second rounders because they'll give them to you. They'll be like, yeah, why not? You know, I still think it was a great trade, but maybe if campaign comes around next year and plays well, it'll be a little better. The thing is, too, let's say campaign realizes his potential as a backup point guard next year. You're then going to have to deal with him in free agency, and he's going to be paid at market value, and then who cares? I mean, it's not like he'll ever be any special value in terms of building a great winner or anything. But neither was anyone else involved in this trade. So it may end up with just being much ado about nothing. And at least if campaign plays reasonably well this year and next year, you'll say, yeah, it was fine. It was no longer this, like, ridiculously stupid thing. The Bulls saw something in pain, and he actually ended up delivering something. And actually, at least if nothing else, reaffirms the idea that these guys aren't so bad. Like, they find talent where other teams don't see talent, and they're pretty successful at it.
Yeah, I agree. I also agree with the Bulls in that second picks are basically worthless. I don't want to get into that down that rabbit hole because I know there's a ton of smart listeners that disagree pretty vigorously with my stance on that. But you know, I know I'm right on that one. I know they're wrong. Let's talk a little bit about. I loved your last Bulls beat, and everyone I encourage to check it out, ChicagoBullseye.com, or you can find it Bulls beat on iTunes. Your day one theory. Could you expound on that a little bit? The day one of free agency, what you want to see the Bulls do. As opposed to being aggressive as they were last year with Felicio.
Day one, do nothing. Day two, do nothing. Up until like day seven, do nothing. Because there's, and we'll discuss it a little bit more in detail if you want, there's like no money out there. So there's a lot of guys and there's very little money. Let all of the guys soak up, you know, whatever money they want to use, like these teams, let them all have their first choices and then go bargain basement shopping. And you've been saying it now for the last few shows that there's going to be some really good deals signed out there. There's a whole lot of money at the mid-level exception, you know, for around the $8 million range. But there is not a lot of money for guys who want more than $8 million a year unless they stay with their current team.
Yeah, it's interesting. You described their plan then is day one, do nothing. Day two, do nothing. Day seven, do nothing. Ironically, I think that's what exactly Felicio's offseason workout plan after he signed that deal. He didn't seem to come back with any noticeable improvement. I do find David Nwaba a very interesting topic because, you know, I mentioned this before, I think, on this cast. I had a conversation with when I was in Los Angeles with a member of the Clippers, or actually he was covered the team, and he was said that he kept on pointing to, you know, the contract that Lou Williams signed, which was basically less than the mid-level exception, and said, get ready for a lot of surprises in the next 2 years, specifically this year, because there's going to be a lot of guys that are not going to even get a mid-level exception. So David Nwaba, I've had a lot of conversations with Bulls fans who feel he will at least garner a mid-level exception. I'm not so sure. What's your take on David Nwaba, and how much would you pay him if you're the Chicago Bulls?
To me, David Nwaba is probably a guy who's in the $3 to $5 million range.
Amen. Yep.
You know, it really depends on what happens. You know, I mean, if some team falls in love with David Nwaba, he could easily be a mid-level exception guy. I mean, I wouldn't say that there's no way that can happen, but you know, it just isn't a guy I would jump out to pay that much money to.
No, I agree 100%. You know, like, there's so many things to love about him. But he's an interesting player in that you can also point to the converse with a lot of them. So, for example, I believe he's leading the team in free throw attempts, which to me is a huge plus. I mean, that's why the Bulls were, you know, average last year, because they had Wade and Rose getting to the Wade and Butler getting to the line so much, and that's a huge asset. Problem with Nwaba, he's a horrible free throw shooter. You know, he shoots right around 60%. I know he's hitting the three at a nice percentage this year. It's 36%, which isn't great. It's, you know, pretty close to average. But he's only had something like 40 attempts. You know, put that in perspective, it's about, I think he's 12th on the team. Vonleh actually has more attempts than David Nwaba. So he's an interesting player in that I think he does bring a lot defensively. But I think some people are far overstating his value. Like, even next year on that Bulls team, which I feel will make the playoffs, I want him coming off the bench. I want him as a, you know, sixth or seventh man along with, you know, Valentine. I don't want him starting. I don't think he should be starting.
Well, I think that's probably true depending on what they do with the roster, though. I think he might be a better starter than Valentine only because Valentine's skill set might do better for you in a bench role. You know, Valentine's a little bit more of an all-purpose player, and you don't really have that coming off the bench. Like, he can be a scorer for you or a facilitator or, you know, another guy can pass and kind of make things happen. So in some ways, his skill set might be minimized with the starters, where you've got more guys who take more shots and are more creative with the ball. And I think Valentine would have the ball in his hands a little bit more off the bench, which I think might suit to his strength. And Nwaba would have the ball in his hands a little less with the starters. But, you know, most of his good shot attempts are coming off offensive rebounds, crashing the glass, wreaking havoc, back cuts, you know, other stuff that works better playing with better players. So I still might say he starts, but using starter bench as a way of viewing the value of a player, I don't think is necessarily the way to go. And I'd agree that, you know, maybe he's not the most valuable guy. I think if some team does make a big offer to Nwaba, the offer is really going to be because they view him as someone who will continue to improve, who will find that free throw stroke, who will improve his 3-point shot and become that 3-and-D guy. And his 3-point percentage has been better lately. It was pretty poor at the start of the year, and I agree with you on the attempts. There's not enough volume to really feel excited about it one way or the other. But we'll see with him. I mean, I just think he's a guy that someone would have to fall in love with him, and based on the amount of money out there, the amount of players out there, I don't see it as overly likely.
Yeah, and there's another player I wanted to talk about, and this is along the lines of, I think we should always be careful to give at least 3 years to judge a player. And that's Denzel Valentine. I know it's kind of a lightning rod on Twitter because our friend, you know, Bulls HQ, Mark from Australia, and check out his podcast at the Chicago Bulls Eye on iTunes. He puts out a good podcast, although I disagree with a large percentage of what he says. You know, it's become like a joke where we're going back and forth on Valentine. But, I mean, anybody who's, you know, semi-conscious can realize he's played very well overall for the last few weeks. I mean, last night, again, in 27 minutes, he puts up 18 points, 50% from the field. He had a great game against the Bucks, 20 points, a great game against the Cavs. And I understand that, you know, how many guys are on the team right now can score? He's probably the only guy, so he's going to get a significant volume of shots. But his three-point percentage is 39.1, which is excellent. He's number one on the team. He's first on the team in assists for any player who's not a point guard. He's second on the team in defensive rebounding overall. Overall, he's better than Lopez as far as average rebounds per game. So he can pass, he can rebound, he can shoot. I mean, what more do you want? I understand he's you know, not the greatest athlete, but he's not Will Perdue out there. I think he plays smart defense. He's long. He's just a very intelligent player. And big picture, he's in year two after a rookie year where he was injured a lot. Let's be realistic about Denzel Valentine. He's a good rotation piece who I think could spot start due to injury, and he brings value to this team. Have you changed your opinion on him at all over the last few weeks?
I wouldn't say my opinion has changed at all. You know, watching him throughout the whole year, you know, I really started watching Bulls basketball probably after Nico came back. You know, so that's my stretch.
But, yeah.
You know, watching him over that period of time, I think I've had a pretty consistent view, which is he's a guy with a lot of tools, and he seems like someone who could develop into a solid rotation piece for the team. Still, you know, got a couple more years to see what he has. I don't think he's a guy who has star potential, but he's definitely a guy who looks like he can be a really solid piece on a team. Guys who check lots of boxes can sometimes have good value. Now, the threat with a guy like Valentine for your team is that he's not good enough at any one thing, and then he doesn't fill a specific enough niche, and so you have like a bunch of these guys who are okay, but you know, not great, and then it becomes difficult to really you know, mix and match them into a total product that's really good. But I don't think that's probably true with him. I think just his three-point shooting is good enough for him to just be a threat in that regard, and everything else he brings is a bonus. So I'm a fan of Valentine. I'm not like a huge fan, like he's a future starting caliber player or near all-star player, but I think he's definitely a very good guy to have on your bench who can do a lot of different things for you, and if he doesn't have to do it all the time, can step up pretty big for you when you need him to.
Yep, amen. So right now the Bulls are at 7 overall in the race for the tank. Suns are 19 wins, 1950 and 55. Grizzlies, obviously, I don't think there's any hope in God's name in catching those two teams. The Hawks with 21 wins, Magic 22, Mavs 22, Nets 23, and the Bulls with 24. They played the Nets twice, correct me if I'm wrong, before the season's out. Nets have no,
correct.
Nets have no incentive to win. Do you think it's possible or likely the Bulls are actually going to be able to move up here to 6 or hopefully 5?
Well, let's be clear. The Nets have no incentive to lose.
No incentive,
the Bulls have no incentive to win. It's hard to say. You know, the thing is, if they keep LaVine and Dunn out the rest of the season, they may be playing in a talent deficit large enough that they could really lose out. And for the Bulls, I mean, if they lose out, they will effectively finish in a tie for 5th, almost for certain. And if they win one game, they probably finish in 6th or in a tie for 6th. And if they win 2, they probably finish in 7th or a tie for 7th. And if they win more than 2, now you start getting back into the dreaded 8th slot, which is cursed, and probably hell will rain down upon the franchise. And we should just give up and, you know, just go follow some other team altogether. So that's kind of the scenario. Now, the really question is, can the Bulls, with 9 games left, lose out? And I don't think that they can. I just think the balls will bounce their way enough that they probably win 2 games and end up in that 7th or tied for 7th type of area. But the key is they have to lose those Nets games. You got to find a way. I don't care if you bench every good player you have, you know, Valentine suddenly needs to rest, and Markkanen also needs to rest, and we're just going to start, you know, Felicio at point guard to see how he would do in that position. Whatever you got to do, you have to lose those 2 games, and if you do that, then I think you can put yourself in at least seventh, which would not be bad.
Not at all. Agree completely. Zach LaVine has minor tendonitis in his knee. That's the rumor. I'm not sure if the truth is there or not. I see no reason why he should play for the rest of the year, and I hope he doesn't.
I think they're talking about that too, right? They said he'd be out at least this week. There's only 2 weeks left. I mean, like, why are you dicking around with a guy who has ACL and then has knee problems? Like, that just doesn't seem like a smart deal. And I think from Zach's perspective, I thought maybe Zach would be rushing to kind of get on the court because he's been so terrible. And speaking of free agent values, if we go back there, we should talk about his contract a little bit. I think with him, he might want to get on the court to try and do something better than what he's done so far because he's not had a good year, and he's going into a big free agency year for him. So he needs to do something to try and earn more money. Maybe wants to show off or score a little bit more before the year's over.
No, no doubt, because right now I am certain there's no team that will give him – first of all, there's not a lot of teams with the space to do it. He's a restricted free agent, and the Bulls – took your advice last year with Nico, who was in a similar situation, restricted free agent, and they played the waiting game. They said, go see what you can get, and there was nothing out there for him. I would be shocked if a team with cap space, and I don't know if you know, do you know if there's any teams with available cap space in the East who could potentially offer LaVine a max contract?
Sure. I'll give you a quick rundown of who has cap room and how much. So you've got Atlanta with $24 to $35 million, depending on Muscala and Deadman's player options. I think those guys probably opt in, given how crappy the market is next year, even though their deals are kind of small. You got Chicago that has up to $25 million. I think they can get $9 million more if they renounce LaVine, and could get up to $34 million. But it seems very unlikely that they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
You got Dallas with $18 to $31 million. They could generate an additional $18 million if Wesley Matthews opted out of $18 million, but that seems like that ain't going to happen. To get the $31 million, they'd need to waive Dirk and renounce Nerlens Noel, which both seem like moves they probably wouldn't make, especially since there's not so many great free agents on this market. Indiana is like the real wild card here. They have anywhere from $16 million to $49
million. Oh, my God.
They got Thaddeus Young and Corey Joseph on player options for $14 and $8 million, respectively. I'm going to guess that those guys opt in, but they're both like borderline, but they could maybe feel like they opt out. Then they've got three guys with non-guaranteed contracts at $10 million, which are Al Jefferson, Darren Collison, and Bogdan Bogdanovic. I think they would probably want to keep Collison and Bogdanovic at $10 million relative to their value, and they would probably waive Al Jefferson, but it's not fully non-guaranteed, so they only get $6 million. And my guess is they end up with $16 million, but it could explode if they decide to do something crazy. The Clippers also are one of those teams that could be all over the board. If you're DeAndre Jordan, are you opting out? That's really the question, because he's got $24 million this year, and there's like only a couple teams, if you just listen to my list, who have over that much money. If Jordan opts in, they have no money. They also have Austin Rivers at $12 million, who could opt in or out. Wesley Johnson and Milos Teodosic at $6 and $6.5 million. So they need like a lot of stuff to happen to generate any cap room. I think there's a fair chance it kind of ends up there zero, but they could end up with a lot more. The Lakers are the one team with just a crap ton of room. So whoever the Lakers like is going to get a big deal, and whoever else is not, they're at $56 million. The Knicks are over unless Enes Kanter opts out of $18 million. I don't think he would do that, but I suppose you never know. Philadelphia's got $22 million. Phoenix has only money if they renounce the rights to Alex Len and Elfrid Payton. I don't know if they would do that. If they do, they'd only get $13 million, though, which isn't a ton of money. And then the Kings got $19 to $35 million based on whether Kupos and Temple opt out of their deals, both around $8 million. And San Antonio could potentially get up to $14 million if Rudy Gay and Danny Green opt out and Tony Parker doesn't come back. So that's kind of like, that's it. Those are the people who have over $8 million. And even like a lot of those teams, like, probably, I think that was maybe 10 teams I named, and only a few of them were over like the $25 million max for the guy under 7 years. And only, the Lakers and potentially the Hawks, depending on their player options, and potentially Indiana if crazy stuff happens, have enough room for a true, max of the $35 million deal. So there's not a lot of room. And you know who I conspicuously did not mention in this? Is the Houston Rockets, whom everyone feels is going to sign LeBron James, even though they are not even under the cap. Even if they renounce Chris Paul, they are not under the cap. But somehow, they are going to get enough money to bring back Chris Paul and bring in LeBron James, because despite having no meaningful tradable assets, they're going to find someone to take on like $60 million of their crappy salary. All right, maybe, fans. I just don't see how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you think the Houston Rockets can generate $60 million, then effectively every team in the NBA is $60 million under the cap, because every team has $60 million of shit contracts that they can't trade,
right.
Except for the Houston Rockets, who can, because LeBron wants to go there and it will happen.
Oh, great point on Houston. I didn't look at that situation close enough. I guess they could offer, you know, number one picks like the Nets did for years to come to get somebody.
That
to
is the only thing they could do. They could, but even their recent picks would have no value. Who's taking on like $45 million of Ryan Anderson to get like the 28th pick in the draft next year?
Right.
No one is doing that. No one is doing that. They have there's just too many guys. I just don't think they're going to be able to trade them. And the thing is, they need to trade them into cap room. So who even can afford to take on Ryan Anderson without taking salary back? Like, no one. No one can even make the trade.
No one can even
make the trade, because there's no cap room to trade the guys into, because they can take no salary back. So it really is just a complete level of ridiculousness. The only way that works out, in my opinion, is if Cleveland, for whatever reason, is willing to trade LeBron to Houston and take back these salaries, or some other third team is willing to do that with cap room. Like I said, there's just no one who has any incentive to do that. Except if I'm a Bulls fan, if you give me your first round draft pick 5 years out, I'm in. You know, I think you can trade out to like 5 years for draft picks. Give me your pick 3 years out and your pick 5 years out, and the rights to swap 4 years out. And then I'll take on all of your salary for you as much as I can to make this happen for you. And then I'll just hope these guys fall off a cliff by that period of time.
Yeah, it's an interesting option, that last one. That way, I would think long and hard about, because the Bulls are probably one of the teams that could theoretically make it happen if they do enough work to free up that space. But overall, let's take a step back. You know, Doug, what you provided there it was great. First of all, thank you. None of those teams, I felt, when you look at the situation, I was going in my head, all right, like, for example, the Pacers. They got Oladipo, who I still think needs to be paid. Like, he's getting to the point where he's going to need a max deal. They're really going to offer a max deal for, you know, to bring in a guy who shot 38% this year? You know what I'm saying? I just don't see it.
No one is offering LaVine the max.
Agreed.
Just throw that. He's not going to get anything. He's just not going to get anything in this market. There's no one who's going to look at LaVine this year and say, I want to take that on. The idea that Bulls fans think LaVine is the max is because he's our young guy with some excitement, right? That's the only reason you would ever think that, is because you overvalue your own guy. Like, if you just put LaVine on some other team and you said, wow, this dude shot 38% from the field and he wants a max deal and he tore his ACL like the previous year, would you even think about that?
No.
And by the way, his PER has never been above 15 in his career. You would never even consider it. You would laugh at the idea that it happened. Like, this would be like paying someone way worse than Rudy Gay to max. You know, I mean, like, it's just, you would not do that. You would laugh at the team that does that. So I think the Bulls should wait him out. The only question is, how low do you wait? Assuming it's no offer. So now you're in the Mirotić situation. If you are the Bulls and you're in the Mirotić situation with him, and Zach still, for whatever reason, thinks he's a max guy, and you have to negotiate with him, and you probably don't want to end up on the qualifying offer.
No.
Because then it's just a terrible deal. You know he's going to leave, and he's going to just jack up the team next year. So really, what is your point with Zach that you would offer him, assuming you now have the leverage, you can't get another deal, and you're just making the offer? How much do you give Zach Levine?
Well, all right. Let's say the Bulls do, and we end up getting, because I think he may be willing to bet on himself and play out the qualifying offer. The advantage is, if let's say that situation happens. I mean, there's probably a worst case scenario, but let's say that happens in the Bulls' case. The advantage is they get to watch him for another year. You know, really decide if they wanted to devote assets to him. The disadvantage is, He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Do the Bulls still have any advantage? Correct me if I'm wrong. I can't recall. I mean, they could still go 5 years, right, where other teams could not? Am I correct?
No one stays after taking the qualifying offer. In the history of the qualifying offer for guys who are, like, on rookie deals and kind of pushed into it for not being able to come to an agreement, only one guy stayed with his team.
And who was that?
I'm trying to think. It was some, like, minor player, too, and it was one of those 7-foot-tall white guys from Duke, I think. I can't remember his name. It was super hyped and then didn't end up doing anything. And he signed, like, ended up signing for, like, a $4 million. It's like, no one ever does it. And in my opinion, if he's about to take the qualifying offer, I just pull it off the table and say, you're an unrestricted free agent. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want him back on a one-year deal. And I'm also not doing a two-year deal like that Mirotić thing. That ain't happening. You know, if you sign him, it's a minimum of 3 years. Because 3 years is just one of these things where, like, now I don't know what's going on with you. 3 years, and I'm looking for that, like, you know, maybe at this point, I don't know, would you try and go $10 million a year? $15 million a year?
Oh, my
gosh. You can't go over $15 million a year on LaVine right now, I don't think. Like I said, if this was a dude on any other team shooting 38%, PER never above 15 in his career, chucking up shots, playing like Euro ball, complete opposite of team basketball. And I know we're banking on the idea that he's going to improve and be better and he's chasing a contract and whatever. But there's such a huge chance that doesn't happen. If it doesn't happen, $15 million is like a $10 million overpay. I mean, he just has to play way better than he is.
Yeah, I agree. Like, he just hasn't proven it. I think what he has proven is he's physically back. And that's kind of like a big thing. You know, because of that he's shown explosion and he had moments like he did against Minnesota, I think you can live with, you know, coming to an agreement at somewhere between 15 and 18 for...
No.
Yeah, you're saying no.
15 is my top for this dude. There's no way I'm going 18. Let me ask you, how many guys who have played 4 years in the NBA and are physically great but have never put up numbers go on to then go put up numbers afterwards?
Well, he put up numbers, though.
He didn't put up numbers.
No,
above 15.
Above
15.
Before he got it. Wait, hold on. You mean last year for Minnesota?
Yeah, it's like 14.5.
Okay.
Above the league average.
Yeah.
Can't play defense, which isn't even measured by PER. So in the non-PER stats, he's also a train wreck.
Yeah. I thought he played well last year before he got hurt for Minnesota.
I know PER shot the ball well. He shot the ball well, but it's not $15 million a year skill.
No, but I feel, I mean, you're banking on potential a lot, right? But you could say that about a lot of guys that are third year in the league. That, you know, hey, he hasn't really put up
massive numbers. It's not third year in the league, it's fourth year in the league.
Fourth year in the league, exactly. A lot of guys that haven't put up just, like, insane numbers. I thought his numbers and what he did before the ACL injury in Minnesota said a lot. Like, to me, what he did that year is worth $18 million a year. The question is, can he get to that again? The question is, and I think this year, I mean, he's shooting 38%. It's so hard to judge him on this year, Doug. I mean, first of all, he's only had very limited time with the best players on the Bulls. He's thrown into a situation where he's trying to prove himself for a deal. It's such a screwed up situation that it's kind of like, you know, I don't think we've actually seen anywhere near what LaVine can be. I think you would agree with that. Where is his potential?
We've not seen his ceiling, but that doesn't mean you're ever going to see it. You're ever going to see what LaVine can be. And I'm just saying, you don't pay a guy $18 million because you assume every single thing that could go right is going to go right with him.
No, you don't. But
like, at this point, is he better than Lou Williams?
I'm saying not. Yeah, he's not better, but he's younger. You got to factor that in. Lou Williams got paid $8 million because he's 31 years old. If he was 23.
Is he going to be? Do you think he's going to be better than Lou Williams in the next 2 years?
I think there's potential that he will be better than Lou Williams in the next
years. He has potential to be better than Lou Williams.
Yeah,
he has potential to be better than an $8 million a year guy.
Doug, look at Jimmy Butler.
$18 million because maybe 2 years from now he'll be better than a mid-level guy, maybe.
Yeah, but
it's just too much for this dude.
I
think it's going to be an interesting negotiation to see where they fall. And just our discussion, this is what is going to be going on between the Bulls camp and LaVine's camp. I'm playing a little devil's advocate. I think, you know, I could probably live up to $15 million for Levine. I don't think I'd go higher than that, though. Not when he has no market. But this is going to be the type of negotiation you're going to have. It's going to be scorched earth. These guys are going to be miles apart. It's going to be nasty.
I hope it doesn't get to that. I hope that Levine and his camp is realistic enough to look at the situation in the NBA and say, you know what, we're not getting a max deal. And we could do a qualifying offer, but God, what happens if we blow out your ACL again? You know, so I mean, or something horrific happens injury-wise. Do you really want to take that chance? We'll go a little bit less in money and maybe come to like an agreement. I'd be fine with $18 million for 3 years or $15 million for four. You know, or try to come to an agreement that, all right, you can make some good money. We'll guarantee you $60 million. And then you'll have another big contract if you prove yourself over the course of those 3 or 4 years. You got another big contract coming to you. You're only 23 years old. You know, so the thing is, though, Doug, I mean, Oladipo, Butler, look at the progress players like that make in years 3, 4, and 5. And to say that a kid who works this hard is not going to get better, it just flies in the face of logic. I do agree that there are concerns. He's not. I mean, he's not a very good player. I don't think he's very good. You're right. There's a lot of hero ball team. And that question was in Minnesota. But there was a time in Minnesota at some point last year, I've talked to enough people, that he was considered maybe ahead of Wiggins until the ACL happened. So that year is where I see potential and value, and I'm judging everything on that. What I wanted to see this year is he physically back? I saw that. His performance hasn't been up to par. It's a tough question. You know, really tough question. You say 15, I say 18. I think we're all in agreement. There's no way this guy should get a max deal. None.
There's no way he should get a max deal. And, yeah, we'll see what happens with him. You know, he's physically back. But to add on for his risks, risk number one, it's his qualifying offer is ridiculously low, like $4 million, right? So if he takes the QO, he needs to make enough over what we would offer him in his next deal to make up for the fact that he lost so much in year one. Risk number two for Zach LaVine is that if he gets hurt again, he is absolutely not going to get a big deal in his next contract. Risk number three for LaVine is if he just plays like this again, he is not going to get a good deal on his next contract. So for LaVine, not only does he have to come back, stay healthy the whole season, and he also needs to then massively improve on what he was able to do this year. And if all of that happens, then he still might just be a $15 to $18 million player next year. Like, even if all that happens, unless he becomes like just a tremendous player, it's not likely that some team's going to offer him the max, because I don't think there's going to be that much cap room next year either. So I think the risks are so heavy for him. You know, I would fold immediately in any NBA type of negotiation as a player, because I'd be like, wow, if you're going to offer me 4 years at 15 a year and I get $60 million, that's enough for me to be set for the rest of my life as long as I'm not a complete idiot. Maybe I'll take that rather than taking three different risks that could leave me with not enough money to make it past like 35. LaVine isn't a guy who's made so much money in his career yet either, because he wasn't a very high pick, so his rookie scale salary wasn't that huge.
No.
You know, from my
That's
end,
where you're off,
I would fold so fast on this thing, but I know these guys, the agents, you know, they're always pushing for the absolute best.
No, that's where you're off, though. So in November 2017, he signed a 4-year deal with Adidas worth up to $35 million. So by most estimates, 32 guaranteed. That's $8 million a year he's getting. He's set. You know, like, yeah. I could see him saying, I'll bet on myself.
You're right.
I'll bet on myself. I mean, he's basically got a mid-level exception deal for 4 years just through a company. So I could see him saying, I'm going to bet on myself this year. That's my biggest fear, is his agent says, screw these Bulls. They're really trying to negotiate too hard. And he'll do the qualifying offer and then just come out and play unbelievable. And then we lose him.
Well, like I said, if he goes on the QO, just don't sign it. Let him go. Go find your other deal somewhere else, buddy. See you later.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah, because he's just going to jack up your team the whole year. It's like bad mojo having those QO guys on the team. They become very selfish in the way they play, and they're not going to stay in the long run. So, and you can't trade them because they have a no-trade clause, and they lose their bird rights if they get traded. So it's like there's no reason to have that guy around if that's what happens. You have to just then part ways and say, we're renouncing you. Good luck. See you later. Yeah.
Well, a great discussion there at the end, especially about LaVine. And I think we've come to some type of agreement there as we pull the big red bus in off the road. Is there anything else you want to touch on and go around the block?
I'm pulling in the big maroon bus. Come on, go, go, go.
The big maroon and yellow and red. It's all together as we pull it in. And we wrap up another exciting episode of the Big Red Bus. Doug, as always, it's been a pleasure. Your knowledge is unsurpassed. And we're all much better for what you've provided for in the past almost 50 minutes. So all the best to you, my man. Until next week. Let's go Bulls, continue this horrific play, and hopefully we'll get that magic number 5. That's what I want to see.
All right. Until next week.
Take it easy, brother. Hope you feel better. Take it easy, Doug. Bye-bye.